One. Welcome back to another episode of Couch Unplugged. The Champions League quarterfinals, first legs. Real Madrid 3, Chelsea 1. Since you watched that game, I want to hear your takeaways from it, and then I'll give my my point of the game and what probably was the most exciting Champions League game of the season.
Okay. I came into this match obviously like 25% done with the match. I came in with the last 75-80% because you played extra time in this one. From what I saw, Chelsea were very dominant during this match because this is a team that I actually wrote off, to be honest with you. I will call spade a spade on that one. This is a team that was fighting to the nail to get something out of this match. And it almost looked as if they were about to accomplish that. You had them equalizing. It could have been 5-4 before the end of the half, but unfortunately it was ruled offside. And it ended up 5-4 on aggregate, which forced the extra time. And then was Karim Benzema again scoring, or who was it?
No, it was. Yeah. It was.
Yeah, scoring the important second goal, and that saw them through. Some of the top three takeaways that I saw throughout this match is first, Chelsea, even though they're going through their struggles at the moment, are still a team capable of putting on big performances, especially away from home. And it was really reflective in this match, going, evening things up. The second thing is Karim Benzema continuing to prove why he's one of the best Real Madrid players of all time. He continues to deliver in moments when it's needed the most, especially with that extra time goal. And the third takeaway was Thomas Tuchel and the tactics that he used to regain control of a situation that could have gone a completely different direction if he didn't make those key changes from the first leg. And I noticed with that, some of the changes were a little bit more aggressive tactics when it comes to approaching the attacking side of the ball, along with being more cohesive and tight in the back three, keeping Karim Benzema and company at arm's length, or obviously more than arm's length. Yeah, that's just some of the tactics that I saw Tuchel change within that third point. And so, yeah.
How for you? How important was the Modric pass though to give Real Madrid life after? I mean, again, it was kind of a train wreck for Real Madrid for large portions of the game. They concede first, it's tied, and they're in front. Chelsea are actually beating them on aggregate, and then the Modric hits one out of his back pocket to Rodrigo to score. How vital do you think that the influence of Modric in that moment was on Real Madrid being inspired to go and then win the game?
It definitely was a huge, like, and vital part. Because if Modric wasn't there and to service Benzema, it would have been good night. It wouldn't have been so bad because there would have still been time to try the goal, but just that perfect timing and then seeing Benzema score along with then just playing a very defensive game to keep the ball away from Chelsea when possible kind of just set them up for success after that.
Yeah, no, I think Chelsea were fantastic. They were great top to bottom. They played a really great game. Mendy kept them in a lot of situations as well. So you got to give a lot of credit to the goalkeeper. you look at how Chelsea have played throughout this, and we can say, yeah, they got ripped one up open at Stamford Bridge. But Chelsea, realistically speaking, is still a top five, top seven team in the world. So it's not. And again, you're going up against another team in that area as far as world, in world football. So these are two top eight teams in the world. We got what we saw from Real Madrid, Benzema with the hat trick in the last game. Chelsea make a mistake. Benzema capitalizes in that first leg. Now you fast forward to the second leg of this, and Chelsea are the more aggressive ones. They get the three goals. They have one waved off, but then they still get another one, and they're in front of the tie. To position yourself from 3-1 down to 4-3 up as quickly as it seemed, it just shows the willingness of Thomas Tuchel and his sort of came into that moment. But then again, the importance of Luka Modric. Rodrigo comes off the bench. He puts it in a place where only he could get it. It was a nice finish, but it was really the service on the pass. To put them in that situation, to put them on that level, with everything that kind of happened, the way it did, and so on. Then an extra time, obviously, Benzema comes up with a big moment. Again, Benzema did not play a great game. A lot of the performance from him was not spectacular. I don't know who got man of the match, but it shouldn't have been him. It was Modric that engineered the comeback, but Benzema is a goal poacher. So when you give him service in the areas where they were able to put the ball, you're going to get that result. So Benzema comes up huge with a big goal. And that's seven Champions League goals in the last three games, and so on. Chelsea did everything they possibly could have to win this game, but it's difficult when you have to deal with a Karim Benzema that can play poorly and still find enough energy to score a goal when needed. And I think that's what it came down to in the end. Again, respect to Chelsea. They played admirably. Real Madrid gets their revenge from last season and still and probably look like one of the favorites as far as the experience standpoint and what they have in their team. Carlo Ancelotti is a three-time Champions League winner with Real, his first time in charge. Benzema is a Champions League winner. Kroos is a Champions League winner. Modric is a Champions League winner. Casemiro is a Champions League winner. I can go on. So a lot of experience there. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to beat any, the next Liverpool would probably be – no, it'll be City. City or Atletico. So we don't know for sure that they can go through that challenge, but they get to a semifinal again. And without this is the second semifinal without Ronaldo. I think it's good on Madrid, but Chelsea did everything it possibly could have and played very, very well to get themselves in that position to go through to almost go through. But that sometimes it's going to happen, and I think Chelsea should feel proud about their performance. But in the end, Benzema will just – sometimes he's just going to find a moment, and Modric found a moment. And two moments of throughout the 120 minutes, two moments to find the entire match. Three, actually. The offside goal by Chelsea, the pass from Modric, and then Benzema's late goal, and Real Madrid through. And we'll see what happens in the next round. All right. So last time you said – the only way Villarreal can win the game is if no one's in the stands. Not only did they didn't win the game, to be sure, but they get through Bayern out. What are your initial reactions from this? Just a little thing here. Villarreal had eight shots the entire over the two legs and scored the two goals they needed. Winning at the end dramatically was crazy, the way they celebrated and everything. And Unai Emery, again, showing that he is one of Europe's best and so on. But what was your reaction to the Yellow Submarine going forward?
First, I would like to recant that last statement now. But, I mean, it was... I'm still in shock that Villarreal were able to sink Fox. I mean, that is something that you really never hear with the Champions League, at least in recent seasons, because of how strong Bayern had been from top to bottom. Obviously, they did what was needed. I mean, I'm still in shock because it's that crazy. But you obviously had Bayern, I think, scoring in this match, I think, once.
Yeah, Robert Lewandowski scored the first.
Yeah, so it even things up on aggregate, but Villarreal dug deep down within themselves and were able to win on aggregate 2-1. Yeah, you want to what's funny right now?
What's that?
I had to explain something to my dad, the old away goal rule. So that was fun. But yeah, it's just crazy to see how Villarreal dug deep within themselves and were able to get Bayern eliminated for the first time in.
I think, let's do the math here. So last year, Bayern made the quarterfinals. The year before that, they made the final. And I think there was a run of four straight years when they made the semifinal. So they got knocked out of the same spot as last year. But to a team of this caliber is surprising. For a little context, Villarreal in La Liga are in seventh with 46 points. Atletico Madrid are in fourth at the moment with 57. So there's a huge gap between where they are and where the other Champions League teams are in the league as far as Spain. So they're not even going to make the Champions League next year. And unless they go and win it, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, definitely it is crazy. I mean, if they win this though, it's going to be huge for them.
Yeah, I think it goes back to like if they actually win this, it's I think it'll be the biggest, most improbable win for the Champions League winner since probably Porto when Mourinho was there. So a very long time and so on. But, you know, even if they made the final, it'd be great. They're gonna have to bite off more than they can chew probably with probably Liverpool. Even if Benfica come back. And they'd be favored if Benfica came back and beat them at Anfield, but I don't think that's going to happen. But to make the semifinal, Villarreal, it gives me vibes of Lyon when they made the semifinal and Monaco when they made the semifinal. So there's occasionally an underdog team like this that can go and do it. And Lyon, the year they made the semifinal, were in 10th in the French league. So it's not always about that, but they've handled themselves well in this competition and deserve plaudits for this. All right, so I'm going to get into the Bayern side here. This is a difficult one because if you just look at Bayern's starting 11, they probably have, bar Man City, the best starting 11 in the world. You have Neuer in goal, Upamecano, Lucas Hernandez, Pavard, and Alphonso Davies in the back. You have Kimmich, Goretzka, Coleman, Sané, Gnabry, Lewandowski, Müller, and sort of Sabitzer, Musiala, who occasionally start games. The problem with this team is they don't have the type of bench. They're not very deep. They have a great 11, and they have one or two subs that can be fantastic. But their bench, their depth, is what killed them in the end. You look at the team that won the Champions League in 2020, they had guys like Coutinho, Perisic, to bring off the bench, for example, as many as well as others as well. So their biggest issue right now is the depth. They need more depth next season, and if they don't get more depth next season, they're not going to win the Champions League. So that's the first point. Secondly, if they were pushed more precisely in the Bundesliga, and this is not a swipe at the Bundesliga, but the fact remains that they are just superior to everyone else. A lot of people say that title races are defined by the quality of the league. That's not true. The Bundesliga's quality from top to bottom is the best league in the world as far as that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Bayern Munich are going to have a team that has the potential to push them around. Dortmund made it seem like maybe they would, and Leipzig had a bad season until they kind of got everything together. So there's not a lot of big teams in the Bundesliga that really can push them around, which doesn't set them up well for situations like these. And you can't even say, okay, well, Bayern struggle against this type of team that approached them this way. They approached the game the same way that all the teams that they have lost to this season have approached them. Against a Man City or a Liverpool, one of those teams, I think Bayern will probably win just on the merits of their starting 11. But so that's the first thing, depth. They got pieces in the starting lineup. They need depth that they can rely on in big moments to come off the bench and do incredible things. And so that's the first thing. Not a lot of great teams in the Bundesliga. They're a great team in the Bundesliga, but not teams that can push them around. They need that they need someone to push them around for them to get to that level. And the third point is, I think Julian Nagelsmann, I think, will come to a point, I think he's one of the best managers in the world. I think he has the mentality, he has the strategy, he's got everything needed to be one of the best managers in the world, right? But he may have taken this job slightly too early, because the big difference in the court and this quarterfinal was the experience of you of the lack of experience from Nagelsmann, even though he made a semifinal with Leipzig, versus the experience of Unai Emery, who's won the Europa League 6 times and it has proven himself in Europe throughout his career. So that was a big mismatch. So just to recap, number one, they need depth. Two, they need someone in the Bundesliga to push them more. And three, they may have given this too early to Nagelsmann, and with time will come more experience, and maybe they can push on from here.
Yeah, I definitely 100% agree, because obviously you see Bayern having this success in like the past few years, where they already had a manager who had worked with them. Pretty much, well, how long was their previous manager
What wasn't that long? It was a year and a half. But if you look at what happened to the team and how they evolved in that year and a half, Hansi Flick's Bayern was unbeatable. There wasn't a way to beat them, basically. I think he won his first 30, 40 games or something. So, again, I understand why he left. I think he was leaving an opportunity to build a dynasty, but he's a coach of Germany now, so I don't fault him for that. But I rate the signing, I rate the hot appointment from Nagelsmann, but I just wish Flick had stuck around for a year, maybe 2 years, and then Nagelsmann goes over and does it. That's my only criticism, because I talk about this a lot. I really like him as a coach. I think he's got what it takes to be the best manager in the world. I just think I'm just starting to think it was just a little premature. That's all I'm saying there with that one.
Yeah, I see that point.
So anyway, they've got work to be done. And so on, and I'm shocked, but I mean, fair play. All the credit goes to Villarreal for what they were able to do in this game, and going forward, we'll see what they do in the semifinal. And Bayern has some things to figure out, and the future of Lewandowski, believe it or not, could be up for grabs, because he has a contract expiring next year. Barcelona are interested. Again, if he's, I'd stay there and break every Bundesliga record there is, but I can understand the intrigue of Barcelona and stuff like that. But we don't know if that's going to happen. But this is something that's being talked about. But there's a lot of bit tough decisions that need to be made with Bayern. And again, not getting rid of the coach, but they need to bring in the right pieces next season so they can reload and try to win the Champions League. All right. Saturday was the 9th, right? Okay, yeah, never mind. I got it. All right, so Inter can win the league now. You beat Verona 2-0. Now you're firmly in the driver's seat for the title. With only one game, you could possibly lose points. I imagine you're feeling top of the world right now.
Hell yeah, I am. Obviously, Milan's still are 1 point ahead, but obviously we still have our game in hand. You had in this match, this is the Inter that I wish we'd seen more consistently throughout this season, besides the first half where they were just on top of everything like a bat out of hell. There was aggression on the attack, there was stellar defense keeping Verona from really getting anything going. I mean, everybody was working in with cohesiveness. This was Inter that we should be seeing routinely, but obviously in the second half of the season, it's either been they've been up or they've been down like that yo-yo. This was just a great performance from Inter. You had Napoli, I believe, drawing their match.
Milan drew, Napoli lost, and you have to worry about anybody else. Top of the
league. Yeah. So that I'm like, wait a minute, I was gonna get drunk. So I mean, with that alone, those results alone from Milan and Napoli, Inter are really in control of their destiny right now. Long as they continue performing consistently. Along with urgency. There we go.
Yeah.
Long as they perform with urgency and cohesiveness the rest of the season, there should be no problem. And obviously, we still have our game at hand against Lunch Meat FC. Bologna.
And just so you know, between Milan, Napoli, and I'll be honest, we're going to get to this. I think Milan is fucked. I think it's possible they don't finish in the top two. But we'll go through that when the time comes. But Napoli and Milan's schedule are much more difficult than yours. You got one tough game left, and that's against us in Rome. You've beaten us twice, but we're firing at the moment. But that's – so even if you like – theoretically, if you play Roma at the Olimpico and we get a draw and you win your game in hand, you'll still be top of the league. So as long as you don't lose that game, then obviously, it's just you're going to be tiptoeing towards another title. And Milan has, if on top of my head, I think they have Atlanta. They have I'm going to check what they have just so we can see the full picture.
Have Juventus.
They have Milan. Sorry, they have Lazio, Fiorentina. Their next few games are not counting. They have Genoa. They'll probably win that. Then the Coppa Italia second leg, and then they have Milan. Sorry, they are Milan. They have Lazio, Fiorentina, Verona, Atlanta, Sassuolo. All of those teams, outside of maybe Verona, could beat them. So, you look at that with Milan on the top of the league. So, theoretically speaking, you could come to Rome and lose, and still it wouldn't necessarily affect your chance to reclaim the top spot with the game in hand. So, everything is kind of in your favor. And again, I'm not saying you should go out to lose to Roma, even though that's what I want. But
I want to win.
No, I got that. Considering the situation that's going on, even if there is one slip up, you could still overcome that because of how the rest of the because of the schedule of Milan and Napoli.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, like I said, pretty much this is one of the matches that I've pretty much kind of dictated what could be seen the rest of the season from Inter, and they did not disappoint. Like I said, just as long as they keep this momentum going through the rest of their few matches, I don't see why we cannot get that second star.
Yeah, I mean, you should. I think it's gonna be increasingly difficult next season to win it a third time. But I think if you're able to pull it off, despite some of the inconsistencies, I think Inzaghi will have proven that he was a good choice ultimately, despite what going on. So if you still go and win the league and whatever, I think that's great, because then you're looking at a Champions League round of 16. You beat Liverpool at Anfield, and then you win the league, and then maybe you get to the Coppa Italia final. But I'll be honest with you, I'm backing Juventus to win that. So you look at all of those things, I think Inter and Drive. So it was a good performance, Jacko Barella with the goals. I don't think we can – there's nothing else to really say about that. They're now firmly in the driver's seat, in my opinion. And like we said a couple months ago, the favorites for the title will change every week sometimes. It will feel that way. Speaking about the old lady, they get a 2-1 win against Cagliari. Should have been a 3-1 win. The Luca Pellegrini goal being taken away is one of the most absurd things I have seen this season, where he strikes the – I don't know if you've seen it, but when he strikes the ball – from outside of the box or whatever. And I forgot who the defender was, or sorry, who the other Juve player is. And the ball goes right at the Juve player. It like shimmies off his shoulder and then goes into the net. And they ended up taking it away, which stinks, because that would have been his first goal for Juventus. And obviously it would have put them in position earlier. But De Ligt gets there, Vladovic gets there, and Juve hold on, but they leave it very late with Vladovic's goal coming in with 15 minutes left. But Juventus still on charge for that Champions League spot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm going to say it. Ever since Vladovic joined Juventus, he's just taken it to a whole nother level, in my opinion. I don't know if you get that same sort of vibe, but...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, and then I'll ask the question.
Yeah, so I think this was definitely a good move for him. Obviously, you see Fiorentina, who we thought for the longest time.
It was Cagliari. We're not at the Fiorentina game yet.
Okay, my bet. Give me unless a minute.
Unless you're talking about Vladovic at Fiorentina. Sorry, I just got confused. That's all.
That's what I meant.
Okay, my bad.
This is. I do things this way. But anyway, but yeah, obviously it looked like it could have been a blow for Fiorentina. But Fiorentina, even though they lost Vlahovic, they're still performing at a decent quality, which is a good sign after Juventus took one of the star players. So, but I mean, Vlahovic has just been a huge addition to that Juventus team that was struggling earlier in the season. And now they're on track to position one of the Champions League spots, which to start out looked like it was impossible. But now they're performing at the level that we're usually used to seeing them. And so good on them.
So I have one question about Vlahovic in particular. I'm just going to wreck some of my team of season shit right now. Tammy Abraham will be one of my strikers. I don't know if that's the case for you. But regardless, I think – would you agree the options, depending on the formation, but with the two-striker formation in team this season, the only real options are Immobile, Abraham, and Vladovic. Would you say that's fair?
That seems fair.
So the question is – I don't know. So let me just ask: of those three, is there one that you're going to have on the list for sure?
Yes.
Who is it? I just so I can phrase my question the right way.
Vlahovic.
Okay. Okay, that kind of answered my question. My question was going to be, would you have Vladovic? Could you see him as a striker? Among the strikers, could he out-duel Immobile? In my mind, I think Tammy's a shoo-in because of Roma's season without him and all that, to the value above him as far as that. But you answered that question yourself. Yeah, Juventus played tough. They win late. Cagliari played as well as it could have, and they got the points there in the end. And then we're gonna move this train on to the biggest shithole in the stadium in Italy, the Stadio Maradona. Nothing against, I love Maradona, but Napoli Stadium is a pile of dog shit. It's awful. They need to rebuild that stadium. And when I was watching this game, that's just the thought that kept going in my head. These guys, as much as I don't like them, they deserve a new stadium. Because this it's not up to standards, in my opinion. Anyway, Fiorentina, without the big man, without Vladovic, Nicola Gonzalez, Jonathan Cohen, and Calabria. Two of those guys were signed to replace Vladovic. Two of them scored, 3-2, beating Napoli, which is a huge result. Fiorentina's right there with Roma, Lazio, and others for a European spot. Huge win for Fiorentina, who have been, again, to me, unpredictably, because they're my dark horse this season. One of the underrated teams this season, and they're a team I don't think anybody wants to play, especially when they're swinging on all cylinders. And to do that to Napoli and basically ruffle feathers in the title race is awesome. But what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was keeping an eye on this one too, because realistically, if Napoli had won this, they would be in second place right now. But based on current goal difference, it puts Inter just slightly above them. So I'm happy with the performance that Fiorentina put on, especially without Vlahovic anymore. They're continuing to prove that they can do it without him. And to me, that says a lot about a team when they can lose one of their best players but continue to perform at a top level. But yeah, this just is a bad thing for Napoli, especially since they're also still in the title race. But I still think Inter will finish the race with their second star above that first one that we just got last year. But I mean, they're still performing for a spot in the Champions League, and so I still think they're going to be in firm control on and off throughout the rest of the season, and they're going to finish in a Champions League spot for sure.
Napoli? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean, I really don't see much of a difference between the two, and I know they struggled out of the gate, but I think once they got things going, I really think that they have what it takes to do that and to be a team that I think next year they'll get even better. There's been no chatter from the guy in the skybox. And I don't know what you feel about this, but do you think Vincenzo Italiano is the runaway for coach of the season?
I would have to say yes, because of what he's done with Fiorentina.
Yeah, I'm right with you there, which is why I picked him to win coach of the season. And, you know, it's really kind of interesting to see how well they've done. You know, the players aren't that different. There's a few changes, but I think the big change is with the manager. And we saw Spezia stay up last year when they shouldn't have, and that was his doing. And I think he deserves all the credit and the praise that, you know, you get from these, you know, from this. And I think he's been tremendous. So I think Fiorentina is just, been the thing. By the way, the star thing is about, it's not every time you win a championship, it's every 10 titles that you've won, just so you know.
Nice.
So if you win another title, it wouldn't be another one because you have, I think, 15 or 16. So to get another star above your thing, you would have to win 20. Does that make sense? I just looked it up because I thought, because I just thought to myself, Inter's got like 16 Scudettos. You'd be able to tell immediately on their jersey if they had 16 stars. I also thought maybe it's for the Champions League because some countries do that and whatnot. But yeah, anyway. All right, so Napoli don't get the job done. Fiorentina takes them out. All right. So Atalanta, I'll just run through a few. Atalanta can't do it again. Sassuolo gets them a den. Traore with a double on the day. Zabata's back, no difference. Atalanta are still struggling out of the gate Yeah, I know we run over this every week, but what the heck is going on?
I mean, we've been coming up with and saying like a bunch of different things over the past few weeks because of this. And to be honest, I'm really starting to think that they have tried every single formation they can think of. They've tried rotating the starting 11 with obviously some of your key players being constant starters, such as Zapata, and he was there like a goat, Robin Gosens and stuff. But I think it's just like a whole thing. Something with their mentality has just been thrown off by this whole thing. So I think it's more of a mental issue now versus that of a tactic or a player situation. I just think that once they started too many matches, they just realized that they couldn't keep up and just decided to like take the foot off the gas and finish the season try to finish the season in the top 10 and then just refocus and rebuild next season and try to get back to mentality. But that's pretty much what I'm starting to think it is just like a whole entire mental issue, because normally if this was the old Atalanta and they were going through something like this, they would be able to rebound maybe, if not the next match, the match after, just figuring out what was working, what wasn't working, and then just continue to run with that win that they had just received, and then they would be off to the races. But it has been seen here.
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, they're in eighth. Roma are 6 points clear. So if the season ended today, they wouldn't even make the Conference League. So this is the type of waters we are kind of flirting with now, because you look at Sassuolo's only a few points back. Fiorentina is 2 points clear, and they're on a good streak as of late, you know. And remember, Atalanta were ahead of Juventus for at least half of the season. Now Atalanta's at 51 points, and Juventus at 62. You know, it seemed like a month ago, it was like a 2 point spread between Juventus and Atalanta. And now Atalanta are 11 points from Juventus. So, again, the performance against Leipzig was great. They got the draw and stuff, but that you would think that energy would have come forward to a game like of so much importance. So, as well as a good team, they're in the top 10 again. As crazy as it sounds, and they lost their coach last year and their best player. So there's a lot to take from this, but I think Atalanta are just I think they're on the verge of becoming what they used to be, which is not a European team. They were the Champions League 3 years, and this run will be remembered fondly in Bergamo. But I'm starting to believe that Fiorentina will now become the Atalanta of the next couple of years, in my opinion. Because I think they have – their stability is all set up now. They got the right coach. They got the right pieces around. And I think with another few signings, they could become that team for Italy. So I don't know. It's hard to watch. It's hard to see. But they just I think they lost their they lost their opportunity in the two Coppa Italia finals and the few years where they were pushing for the title. All right. Okay. I will just go through my line and then we'll end with Roma because I have to do a rant on a particular player.
Torino. Okay, everybody, he needs to do a rant. Luckily, I have snacks this time.
We'll cover the Roma game, and then I'll do my spiel on Zaniolo. I think you knew who was going to be about before I even said anything.
Yeah, because I saw your post.
Yeah, I was pissed. Let's just run through the Milan Torino game. I mean, almost identical stats. I mean, not really that relevant, but 14 shots each, three on target each for both teams. Accuracy almost identical. Milan had more passes, but again, Milan dropped the ball. Because when Napoli lost, I'm like, oh my goodness, AC Milan about to win this league. Because if they're going to win their game, then we're gonna go to Napoli's going to come to our house and we're going to beat them on Monday, and then Milan will be basically handing Milan the title. Now it's gone the whole other way. We're like, not Milan have sabotaged it, because with your game in hand, if you win that, that's you're going to be in front of them, and you know, Napoli, you know, lost their mojo too. So now it's like it went from Napoli Milan and Napoli to now Inter has all the cards, and now they need us to do them a favor, because it was going to be the other way around, because we needed them to kind of do their thing, and so we could beat Napoli and Inter, you know, and it's a whole different thing now. So I'm not stunned, because we talked about this a few weeks ago. I said if this Milan team won, it'd be the worst team to win the league since 2012. Again, no disrespect. It's just the reality. So maybe ultimately Inter winning the league is better because it makes more sense for history. But Milan, Torino's a good team. We know they are. But it's I don't know. It's just they're folding with all the pressure, kind of like in a very Borussia Dortmund fashion.
Yeah, that's actually a good analogy for that. The Borussia Dortmund factor, brought to you apart by the yellow people in the stadium.
The yellow wall.
That was so stupid.
That it's not the yellow wall's fault that they're a super talented team or chokers. The difference is Dortmund's team on a talent perspective is so much higher than AC Milan, with all due respect. But it was just very similar, because they're throwing the league away again. So it's frustrating, because I have a lot of respect for AC Milan, but I feel like they're just crumbling in the biggest moment.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I was seriously shocked too, especially since AC Milan were going up against Torino, who hasn't been the best this season, because usually we expect a lot more out of them. So this was completely shocking. So basically, you beating Napoli and then beating Inter was supposed to gift AC Milan with the title, but now it's up for grabs again.
Now it's almost like, sorry to cut you off, it's almost like now we have to do you a favor. We beat Napoli, and then we just do a handshake and agree to draw the game, which may not be beyond the realm of possibilities, considering Mourinho and Inter's connection. And then they win the league after that.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's just shocking to see. Yeah, in all the Serie A groups, they've been saying exactly what we've been saying throughout this whole season. Welcome to another episode of Who Doesn't Want the Scudetto, brought to you by Inter, Napoli, and AC Milan.
Hey, it's wonderful to be in a position where we were never going to win the league, so we couldn't throw it away.
Exactly, but I mean, it's kind of, to me, this is like a title race that I've always wanted to see within my tenure of Serie A. Because normally we're used, at least when I've been a fan, if anything, it's been like a one or two team race. But now you're seeing three teams going after it, which is nice to see. Because finally it beats the whole, I guess, what is that term they use? Farmers League?
That's to me, and we can talk about this for a minute. I don't think a farmer league means. I don't think the quality of the league should be defined by the exchange of champions. A farmer league or the league's quality should be defined by the quality from top to bottom. Which Champions League races are the most exciting? Which relegations race are the most exciting? Which title races are the most exciting? In the end, it doesn't matter who wins the league. As long as you have a title race, the Europa League and Champions League battles are good, and the relegation battles are good. I would say Italy, maybe Germany's better in terms of collectively, probably, but they have a decent title race. We have a great title race. We have a great Champions League race. We have a great Europa League race. Actually, not Champions League so much, but top to bottom, we're checking all the boxes.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's just great to finally see the title race become a little bit more wide open with a third team getting into the fray. Unlike seasons past, where it's usually been one or two teams. But, yeah, overall, this is just a shocking turn of events for Milan. And, obviously, as we discussed their upcoming schedule, it's going to be very difficult for them to maintain that momentum.
The good thing is the Genoa game is at home. Because you know that's not an easy – I know this and you know this. It's not an easy place to get points. So, essentially, we're in a point now where, okay, the Genoa game will probably win, right? Well, let's just assume. It'd be funny if they then lost. But then
that'd be hilarious.
Then you have to go to Rome to take on arguably the best striker in the league in Immobile. Not like in the terms of like this season, but in general. In general, Immobile is the best striker. Then you go, then at home against Fiorentina, that's not an easy match to play. So that's gonna be difficult. Then on the road to Verona at home is tough. They aren't unbeatable, but they are tough. We've lost to them at home. Then away at Atalanta. Atalanta sucked away from home. So maybe that game is not as dangerous as the other ones. And then they finish with Sassuolo. I know this because we almost didn't beat them. We almost lost to them, and you did lose to them. So that's not an easy game either. So if you look at the rest of their schedule, the only game that might be winnable or easy is the Genoa game and maybe the Atalanta game. Immobile scored a hat trick this weekend. So that should indicate you that he's firing on all cylinders this season regardless. So it's just going to be tough. All right. Roma win very, very late against Salernitana at home. This was a match that gave Roma maybe more problems than they probably expected. But it wasn't. But Roma still were kind of in control the entire time. Salernitana only 33% possession. They had a wicked free kick that put them in front. Roma are fighting away, chipping away the entire time, all the way through. And then you get two late goals from the almost unlikely sources, with Chris Smalling and Carlos Perez scoring the goals within a couple minutes of each other. Roma gets the points, and they've gotten all the points that they've needed up until, the Napoli and the Inter games upcoming. What was your take on this? And then I'll give my rant about Zaniolo after.
I mean, this is definitely good for Roma in regards to the Champions League spots and even just Europa League at this point too, which is huge considering that you guys haven't been finishing well the past few seasons. So this just shows like how much strength this Roma team has to get back into the European competitions, not the one that if you're a Roma team who expects better, not the Mickey Mouse Cup, otherwise known as the Conference League, but if you're a team that isn't like Roma, say if you're such as like the Fiorentina and stuff, this would definitely Conference League, it would be beneficial for them because it's huge. But I mean, overall, you have, I mean, ever since Tammy Abraham has come to Roma, he's been firing on all cylinders, and he's obviously, in this match, you didn't see him on the back of the net, but he still made his presence known, trying to create as many chances as possible. Then, of course, you had Perez and Smalling fighting the back of the net, giving you guys the much-needed win. But, I mean, just overall, this is a great look for Roma, considering of how they've been finishing overall the past maybe 2-3 seasons in general.
Yeah, and hopefully we can take this. And remember, no Pellegrini because he intentionally got a yellow card in the previous game. It was so funny. He started taking his shin guards off stuff as he was walking off. It was really funny. Yeah, hopefully they can take this momentum and then into Thursday and beat the Hobbits in Rome.
Hashtag Hobbits.
Maybe that's why they keep beating them. It sounds like a Hobbit name. Bobo Glint. That sounds like a Hobbit. And again, with all due respect, because again, they've beaten us this season. This is just crazy. 10-2 on aggregate, which is crazy. We lost two of those games. We lost late on last Thursday. But if Roma don't win the Conference League and they get knocked out by them, I want them to win. I think that'd be amazing. A little small team from Norway winning the Conference League, I think that would be sick. Anyway, so let's get to the topic at hand. I'm starting to have a problem with Nicola Zaniolo. And I think it needs to start being addressed because what's happening here is not unobvious. It's quite obvious what's happening here. Before I unleash to what my problems are, I think we have to talk about the things that he does brilliantly because I think it's unfair to kind of – because it will all go first full circle. So as far as the initial deal with Inter, they won it. Because Roger was there for a year, left, and then left again, and then left again. So you never saw the Roger that we saw in Roma. Nicolo came to Roma. That first season was amazing. His first professional game was against Real Madrid in the Champions League, which was a ballsy choice by Di Francesco at the time. Then you look at some of the other things that have come across, the goal against Sassuolo where the goalkeeper's on his back, the strike against Napoli. So there's so many great moments. And what we saw 2 years ago is the emergence of a star. And there were still things about his game that were frustrating that we needed to deal with, that he needed to evolve and he needed to handle, right? So you look at everything that he's done. Then the two unfortunate injuries, and again, it's such unfortunate that that happened because it seemed like he was just ready to take off. So there's a lot of things he does well. With the ball at his feet, he's tremendous. He's really gifted. He dribbles like a magician at times. He has really good control. He's got a decent shot on him, too. Again, we don't get to see it that often, but he can pull one out of his back pocket in dangerous positions and be really, really effective. When he dribbles on the ball, it feels like that nobody can touch him. You know, he can't get it. No one can get it off. However, with all that being said, and what I'm about to say has nothing to do with his injuries, because the two things that I am critical of Nicolò Zaniolo, you will understand that has nothing to do with his knees or not being what he was. I don't think anyone expected him to go back to 2020 Zaniolo before he got injured or 2019 Zaniolo. I think people thought it was going to be slow progress, But we have to see our players. We have to see young players like this evolve and fix their mistakes. So so Mourinho brings him on at halftime. He's brilliant in the midfield, in the final touch, in the dangerous area. Gets into the final third, where Tammy Abraham and Mkhitaryan are there constantly. Roma were losing the game at the time, and he could not. He didn't realize he had other teammates. He was trying to be like pull off some Leo Messi stuff, and what he did with the ball in the game was fantastic. But every time he had an opportunity to score, he would ignore the more plausible, the easier chance, so he could be the hero. The selfishness and horrific decision making. If you look at the game and the chances that he had, and again, he had one really good chance, and I said that when I wrote my article about this a few days ago. But outside of that, you look at the chance he created in the box. Tammy Abraham was in an attacking position, not unguarded, but in a much better spot to score multiple times. Tammy Abraham could have scored twice. Roma could have put the game away way before the 83rd minute. You know, 80th minute, we were still losing the game. We could have scored twice in that time. So this is these are the two things that I'm fed up with Zaniolo. First of all, he is good. A lot of Roma fans has taken him into their hearts. I have taken Pellegrini into my hearts and other players. I am more enthused with Felix Afina than I am with Zaniolo, who both have similar problems. The selfishness needs to stop. He cannot continue to try to be the man. He thinks of himself as a superstar. He's a guy who could become one if certain things of his game, come out. And then secondly, decision making. I can get decision making sometimes because a young player still is trying to figure himself out. He had just been not played for 2 years, and he was really trying to put everything together. His decision making has not gotten better through games. It has gotten worse, and his selfishness has gotten worse. And I'm not saying he doesn't have the right attitude, because I'm sure he trains hard, works hard. But when he's on the pitch, he has a selfish attitude within himself as far as all these things. And he's not evolving as a player. Zaniolo offers a lot until you kind of reach the goal. When you get those areas where he needs to be passing the ball, he could have scored at the end. And again, tries to be the hero instead of cutting back earlier and getting out Tammy, who would have scored a third goal. So again, I'm not suggesting that Roma need to sell him, but I'm certainly not suggesting that there isn't a price. And as long as Juventus isn't cashing the check, if Roma get a decent offer for him, and at some point, I think you have to take it. Secondly, I'm comfortable giving him one more season to see these things improve. The problem is he's not making it an issue to improve much like this, which gives me makes me think of his example. You may not know. Do you know who Ben Simmons is, the basketball player, at all?
I vaguely heard of the name.
Okay, so I'll just bring it up to speed. Ben Simmons is an incredibly gifted point guard, 6'7", really reads the game really well, great passing ability, gets to the basket whenever he wants to, but he won't take a shot. He never shoots. And that is the NBA has become a shooter's league. If you hate basketball, I'm sorry I'm making this reference, but I just got to. So people that don't shoot aren't going to be as effective, et cetera, et cetera. He sat out because he wanted to get traded, all this stuff. It's a lot of other distractions as well. But it's not that he can't shoot. It's he doesn't make it a point to shoot, meaning he needs to shoot. And that's the thing he needs to improve on, and he refuses to do it. And again, selfish play and decision-making. Selfish play is an attitude. That's where it comes from. Your mentality and your attitude. You can change your attitude. You can decide to be more more selfless. Again, 103 games for Roma, 18 goals, 14 assists. The good numbers. He has it in him. He can be that player. He can be more facilitator if he needs to. But he's so obsessed with trying to score goals, and he does it to a fault. When you're down in a game, you should not be taking on every defender and trying to shoot. Again, he got through a bunch of them. But he, when it was time to make a pass, he refused to do so. Okay? So there's that. And the decision-making needs to improve. He needs to work on it with Mourinho. He needs to work on it with Abraham, with Pellegrini, all these guys that are exceptional decision makers. You know, everyone has a bad decision here and then. But we want to see, as you know, with Rome, with Inter players, you want to see that, because with Handanovic, how many times have you been screaming about his lack of decision making? A lot, right?
Hang on, let me count. I don't got to that. There's not enough time for that.
But the difference is, he's a player that's been a top 10 goalkeeper for a very long time. He's on the back end of his career, and he's just not the goalkeeper he was back in the day. So, as much as we're both frustrated with his decision making, could you at least understand why his decision making isn't as sharp as it was 10 years ago, right?
Exactly.
So the difference here is, his decision making is, he's a 22-year-old kid. I don't know why I say kid. That's everyone who's not like who's like 25 years old or younger, but you know, whatever. He's got a tremendous talent. He could arise and become one of the best players in the league, but he can't be selfish. That's number one. And his decision making needs to get better. And until he does that, Roma will have come to a point if he doesn't improve in these areas. Like, how much value is he really giving us? If he does all the things except the things he's supposed to do, that's a problem. We could get someone else who can give us this. Let's just say Felix Afina had after the two goals against Genoa. He really struggled with decision-making the next couple of games. But eventually, lately, the last couple times he has played, he's shown he's improved in that area. He started this game. He had a few opportunities. But even in the chances that he couldn't capitalize on, he made the right decision in the moment. Another young player that's come onto the scene. The Polish the left back, the young kid that we were talking about a few weeks ago, Zalowski.
Yes.
So he's a perfect example of this also. He's come into this team, and again, he's 19 years old. Afina is 18 years old, but then this 19-year-old kid comes in. Vina hasn't been a huge success. He's come in, has only played, I don't know, maybe 10 games in the league, something like that. And he's been out there, and he's performed, and he's provided energy, and he's been exactly what Roma need. A player that makes good decisions, but when he doesn't make good decisions, he's apologizing to everyone. In the Derby, I don't know if you remember this, there was a chance in the early parts of the game where he almost gives it to Immobile, and he almost scores. He's basically apologizing to his entire defense. Again, he doesn't make a lot of bad decisions. There's poor decision-making there. And that's going to happen. He's 19 years old. I'm not expecting him to be flawless, just like I'm not expecting Felix to be flawless. But Felix is getting better and better with each game, making better decisions. Nicola Zalowski is continually making better decisions. He's evolving as a player. Both Zalowski and Felix are both evolving through each game, where Zaniola is not evolving at all. It's like the same issues keep coming up. And again, I would love him. I would adore him to do this, to go and fix those two parts, the two things that he's most sort of dealing with and all that. So he does, if he's able to do this, evolve, make better decisions, and then stop being so selfish, Roma got a real team next season. He's someone who can provide a lot. But if we're sitting here 8 months from now, and I'm having, again, I've been talking about decision-making with Zaniola all season. Have I not?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. So if we're having the same conversation in 8 months, he's going to be fighting for his Roma life. And I know management likes him. Tammy likes him. Mourinho likes him. So he's very well liked around the place. I think he provides a lot of incredible stuff going on with everything. I think he's got a lot of potential, and he can take that next step and become a superstar in Italy. But in order for him to do that, he needs to swallow his ego, leave it at the door. Secondly, just try to make better decisions. Again, with this one, I'm a little more lenient as long as I'm seeing improvement. So go and improve. Try to improve that part of your game. Do this and that. Play as well as you can the rest of the season, and try to show me some improvement. Because we can't be sitting here with the same conversation. His performance on Sunday was unacceptable. You can't, again, I've said this three times. You cannot be trying to take everyone on when you're losing the game and Tammy Abraham is open. We cannot be doing that, because it's almost to the detriment of the team when you make those side of decisions. And that's decision making, but it's also selfishness, because the reason he's doing that is he wants to score, which I respect, and I just hope that he can turn things around and do that. But we can't ignore what we are seeing with him, as talented as he is. Those two things need to change now, yesterday, last week. So we have to – so with Daniel, I think we should be patient with him, give him more time to evolve. But he needs to start improving this, or else, Roma can find a less talented version of him that is selfless and who doesn't make those type of decisions, and who's better in front of goal. Roma can find that. I think we love what we have with Zaniolo, but we can only hold on to this for so long if he doesn't improve in those areas. So, again, I hope the best. I hope he can do this. I hope he can start to improve. And I hope he becomes. I hope his ego changes. I hope he's becomes more of a player that is just trying to help the team win rather than less selfless. More selfless, less selfish, and improved decision making. Anyway, it's something we need to discuss and needs to be talked about, and we can't just ignore that because when you're watching the games, you see exactly what's happening and so on. Anyway, what were your thoughts on my short novel?
Oh, that was a short novel. I thought that was like 5,500 pages. Like, Jesus. But yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, it's just like with any job, like, okay, I'm going to speak from my own work experience. Like, recently, I was getting less hours because I wasn't strong on this position called linebacking, because I work in a fast food chain called Chipotle. For those of you who don't know, the food is good if you're not used to eating it every day. But when you work there, you're eating it every day. It just becomes food at that point.
Based in France, right? Just kidding.
But yeah, so linebacking is where I restock and replenish the ingredients for both the front line and the digital making line where you online orders are made. And recently I was slow. And that's why my hours were being cut back, because they couldn't rely on me to do things in a quick, efficient manner. But after talking to some of my coworkers and getting their feedback and how I could improve, I just started improving and just learning from what they told me to do. And now I'm getting my hours back. They even said, when I was going through that whole situation, like, yeah, we can easily find somebody else to replace you and train them. So that lit a fire under my butt to basically work on improving. Yes, there are days where I'm still slower than others, but for the most part, I've improved. And just like in the sport of football, if you're not willing to improve and do and listen to the feedback you're given, you're just basically screwing yourself in the end. So, yeah, I can 100% agree with what you're saying.
I think he's going to get a tongue lashing from Mourinho. I mean, I know Mourinho well enough to know he was not pleased with what was going on with him and the ball. Again, it's so weird, because everything until the attacking areas is just like, Oh, he's such a gifted player. He's so talented. It's so fun to watch him put the ball, you know, because he is just a superb talent. I think there's no way around that one. And, you know, I hope the teammates encourage him, and I hope Mourinho needs to crush him. I mean, he kind of needs to crush him, because we can't have that against – like, dude, if he did that against Inter and Napoli, the two biggest games of the season, when Roma are not winning the game, we're going to have big problems, you know, because what we're set out to do and all that. But do you think that maybe he needs someone in his corner that's critical of him? That's maybe a close friend or somebody on Roma that can just tell him, just kind of give him that harsh advice, that harsh vibe when he needs to hear it. Because otherwise, what he can't have is people in his corner saying, "Oh, you're the greatest. You're way better than those other youngsters in Italy. You're the man," because you're constantly banging him up when he needs to hear some harsh truths as well.
Yeah, I definitely like. For me, I'm gonna give a shout out to my coworker Jackie. She's like one of my work best friends, but she also knows how to like put me in my place or tell me I need to work faster. So I do think we all need somebody like a Jackie to like be in our corner, to not necessarily to be harsh with them and kind of like, or and just say, "Hey, this is not okay. But if you work on doing this, and if you're not comfortable doing it on your own, we'll do it together." Like my Jackie helped me and stuff. So, I mean, I think you kind of need somebody in that corner, to someone who's going to be harsh with you, but will also work with you as well. So, yeah, I think he would benefit extremely from that scenario.
Yeah. I think they should keep him off the bench as a sub, though. I mean, the Napoli game is... The Napoli game will be tough as well with the Inter game, but in those two games, I don't think you can run the risk of him doing that. I mean, this is basically all my opinions and stuff and whatnot. But when you've seen him, have you seen similar things to what I'm describing as well? I'm just okay. Curious from an outside perspective. Because I'm invested in this Roma team, if you haven't noticed. But
no, that was my first clue.
But from as an Inter fan, when you watch Roma play, the highlights are full games or the derby, or actually didn't play the derby, but in games, when you see his, what's your take on the way he performs in those kind of situations, and do you see some of what I'm describing.
To be honest, he's a lackluster player at best. I mean, when he came into this Roma team from Inter, he was like firing on all cylinders. He was one of the best players on the Roma team at the time. But then after the injuries and just a lot of things that went on with him, he just hasn't been up to snuff. And then you see the young, like, egotistical stuff that goes on with a lot of young – obviously, there's some young players who come from humble backgrounds where they are taught to work as a team to achieve a common goal.
Yeah. Where
some kind of come from that, like, entitled area where they think that they're better than everybody and stuff, but that's not – right, when you have a team that is trying to work together to achieve something but more than just the name on the back of the jersey.
100%, 100%. The thing is, I just want to add one thing. So Zaniolo, I think he has a chip on his shoulder because he's been rejected from a few clubs. He's had the injury. I don't think he's a selfish person. I think he's so desperate to score that everything else goes out the window. Do you think that's a fair assessment of basically his actions? Because he's a terrific player in a lot of aspects, but in the one that counts the most, he seems to always falter.
I guess that would be a realistic assessment. But, I mean, just like I said, from what I've seen, until he kind of gets back into the I mean, before the injury, I know he's trying to score to get back into that form he once was in, but sometimes that may not be the case anymore, especially since you've had these severe injuries, which will could slow you down. And so you really should start working on relying on your teammates and being more of a facilitator instead of a scorer. I mean, as a facilitator, I think he would be a great person for that.
Yeah, he's got – yeah, he's gifted in midfield as well. He has 8 assists, 4 goals, 8 assists this season. It's not awful, but it doesn't tell the whole story and all that and stuff. And I think the reason people, I'll be honest with you, Zalewski, the Polish kid, he doesn't have ego, but of all the Roma young players, he's got the most reason to be. Because he was just a absolute monster with the Roma Primavera. He's been someone that me and Marcus have been talking about for 3 years. Felix came from Ghana, traveled to Italy on a boat. I mean, there's a lot of backstory of hardship and stuff, which is why I think he's evolving on a higher level. But anyway, yeah, so I think we'll just wrap it up there. But we needed to have this conversation about Zaniolo. Again, I really hope he starts improving and is able to do this. But we need to see him evolving more than some of his other younger teammates as well. So anyway, thanks for listening. See you later.